You lived in Detroit. What was it like?
Well, in 1967 in Detroit, we had the riots. And that was a huge event, you know, because my neighborhood was all white. You know, you had your white neighborhoods, you had your black neighborhoods, you know. And civil rights was gaining momentum, you know, 63, 64. People of color and people that were, you know, downtrodden and being abused finally had enough. You know, the police were probably an all-white police force, you know, and they had a heavy hand, and they weren't putting up with anything, you know, so they were busting a lot of heads, and the black people were being oppressed, and there was a couple of incidents that triggered the whole riot, and then the city just went up. I mean, there was several blocks, people were looting and burning buildings, and we were far enough on the west side of Detroit, again, in our white insulated neighborhoods, that it didn't really impact us other than what we heard on the radio or saw on TV. You know, I didn't know anybody killed. I didn't know any black people. There were no black people in my schools. So it was just like a different world that we didn't know anything really about. So 67 was scary because it wasn't that far away, and yet it was still, in my mind, a long way away. You know, I was 12 years old. I wasn't really that impacted by it, I guess. But the Tigers were a very good ball team that year, and they almost won the pennant. And then in 1968, which was that tumultuous year, they actually did win the pennant. So some of your questions about what I was feeling or experiencing in 68, I was focused on the Detroit Tigers winning a pennant, you know, and then going into the fall. And in those days, you played the whole season to play the World Series. There was no playoffs. You know, you'd play the whole season, you finished in first, boom, then you play the National League champ. And it was a 7-game series as always. Tigers were down 3-1, came back to win that World Series, and Mickey Lolich and Denny McClain and you know, some of my heroes from those early days, you know, are still my heroes now. But I was a huge baseball fan, and so as I mentioned to you, that was a big thing about 1968 in the summer, was the Detroit Tigers, and they brought the city back together. It was a real healing through baseball, you know, blacks and whites, so everybody supported the Tigers. You know, it was just a fun time.
Right, in those tumultuous years, that was very important.
Yeah, that was part of that tumultuous year, though, but a lot went down.
What's your family's views on the riots and civil rights movement? Did they feel alien in any way, because of the huge segmentation?
Well, my parents were very pro civil rights. We never used the N-word in my house. You know, and there was never any real negative talk about, even when the city burned, you know, like those damn those or those damn, you know, those, they, you know, there was none of that kind of talk. And we were very pro Martin Luther King Jr., you know, and what he was doing and trying to accomplish. But we weren't active. We weren't activists, you know. Our social circle was white, our neighborhood was blue collar, you know, pretty conservative neighborhood. There was two newspapers at the time. There was the Detroit Free Press, which was a little more liberal, and then there was the Detroit News, which was your kind of your lunch bucket, blue collar kind of newspaper. And I had the news route, and I was a paper boy. And on Sundays, I had almost every customer. My two blocks that I covered, which had my house in the middle of the route, which was terrific. But I had probably 90 customers to the Free Press boys, 12 customers, you know. So it was just, that's the kind of neighborhood I grew up in, you know. It was a Detroit News, but we were Free Press people.
But you were a paper boy, so you saw
Yeah.
like the news about Vietnam and civil rights. You just saw you like you were one of the first people that saw those.
Yeah, that's true, right? In the morning news, you know. Or not the morning news. I delivered afternoon news, which was right after school. I had to deliver my papers.
Did you ever, like, look at those, like, headlines?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure I did, but, you know, I don't think I felt that much impact from that. You know, it was more about just getting the papers and getting them delivered, you know, so I can't really say that I read too many of the stories just because I delivered the papers. But, yeah, I was kind of at the cutting edge, wasn't I? But, you know, basically it was yesterday's news. By the time you're delivering it, it wasn't as, you know, I mean, it wasn't something that happened that morning and you're reading about it in the afternoon. It was more what happened the previous day.
Right.
You know.
This pro-civil rights, the pro-civil rights attitude, was that unanimous for people in your neighborhood, or was that just...
Oh, no. No, there was a lot of racist people in my neighborhood, you know. Mostly, you know, Italian, Polish, mostly Polish. Not that Polish people are racist, but they were working class white people that felt like, you know, people were wanting something for nothing. You know, they felt like the black people were asking for handouts, you know, and weren't really working for what they wanted to achieve.
What'd you think?
I was kind of more liberal than a lot of my neighbors, I would say. You know, I thought there was more to it than just not trying hard. You know, I thought that the cards were stacked against them. You know, they had to live in the worst areas. They had to do the worst jobs. I mean, the only time you'd see black people around my neighborhood was if they were picking up trash, you know, off the back of a garbage truck. You know, they just didn't have middle-class jobs in my area, you know. But the factories, you know, they had a lot of jobs at the factories, but then they'd go home to their neighborhoods, you know, like Inkster, for example, or, you know, downtown, you know, where you go to school now, you know, some of those neighborhoods. Well, you know how the city is divided. It's always been divided.
There's always been that sort of ethnic divide?
Oh, yeah. Detroit's never been an integrated city. And in fact, in 68, well, after the riots, a lot of white people started getting scared. And that's really when the white flight started, you know, in the late 60s. People started moving north and west and, you know, getting out of the city because they were fearful.
Right. Tell me about the white flight. Did you see that? Like, did you see people move? Like even in your area, like, did people did white people from you know, the lower, what was that like? Was that like Lower East Side Detroit? Like, did they move to like your area?
Well, yeah, we were one of the nicer middle class areas of Detroit on the very west side, and we had Dearborn to the south of us and Dearborn Heights, and Dearborn was almost all white. And very racist, and we were almost like an outcropping of, we weren't Dearborn, we were still Detroit, but, you know, people didn't really rush out of our neighborhoods because they still felt safe and they still felt like it was all white, but integration and busing and things like that scared the white people when you know, the state ruled that, or the government ruled that black kids were going to be bused to all-white schools to attain integration. And people were up in arms about that. And since they couldn't change that, they tended to move out to the suburbs. The suburbs just started growing, and the city started getting smaller and smaller. You know, the population started decreasing in Detroit, and it has ever since.
But you saw, like, a sort of more overt middle class.
Say again?
Did you see, like, a more overt middle class? Because, like, people were going to the suburbs?
Well, it wasn't that the people were, you know, really doing better. They were just moving outside the city boundaries, you know, where they didn't have to deal with black people or, you know, busing, for example. They went to places like Warren, Sterling Heights, even Livonia, which is where I live now, basically. My address is Westland, but my son's school is Livonia, and all my activities are in Livonia. And Livonia is still like about a 98% white community. I can't say it's a racist community, But it's just the way it always has been in Detroit. You know, you have your white areas and you have your black areas.
Did you ever witness racism? Like, did you ever like just see it?
Well, sure. Sure. I mean, I had people that, you know, would use the N-word all the time. You know, I never saw black people getting beaten up or anything, you know, but when I was hunting in high school, it was almost all white, and then eventually it became 10% black and then maybe 20% black, and that's when the troubles started, because then black people felt a little bit more empowered because they had a bigger percentage of, you know, their homies around. So they weren't as fearful. So and then they were getting more and more outspoken, you know. And there was some troubles, you know, there were some clashes.
In high school?
Yeah. You know, a few black and white fights and things like that. But
did you have any friends who were in these fights?
Not really. You know, there was a lot of also infighting. You had like jocks and freaks, and everybody, you know, had their own social circles. And there was infighting between other white groups too, you know. But then you had some black athletes, you know, that knew some white athletes, but they never socialized. You know, but you might have a school dance and somebody would say something, or, you know, I mean, but it got worse after I graduated, because the percentages continued to grow, and as the balance of power started to shift, more troubles happened. Like when my brother went to Cody High in Detroit, which is where I went. Cody High has a long history, but like I said, eventually...
A long history of what? Racism? Or...
Well, like I said, it's... Cody is kind of a, there's a whole movie about Cody's resurgence, you know, but it became all black eventually, you know, but it was that transition time that was white people were fearful of, you know, because once the balance of power started shifting, you know, black people are scary to white people, and, you know, mostly, and especially in high school, you know. I don't know if that sounds racist, but my youngest brother actually went to a Catholic grade school because my parents were afraid to send him to Cody at that time because it had gotten so rough.
Because of the clash, the racial class?
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting is you said it became all black. Like, there are no white people in that school anymore?
Very few, if any at all, you know. Everybody that could have got out, you know, the neighborhoods got out. I mean, where my dad lived, the house that I grew up in, you know, that whole neighborhood went from Polish to black in about a 10-year period. And then a lot of the homes became abandoned. A lot of drugs moved in, a lot of crime. And we eventually moved him out of there maybe 5 years ago. But at the time we got him out of there, it was a crack house across the street operating, and every third house on that block was boarded up. And that was a neighborhood that I used to deliver papers in, and the houses were well kept, the neighborhood was clean, it was all white, and it was all working. And people can't really understand the social economic reasons for why it looks like it does now, you know. It's a complicated story.
So it's like, it sounds like there's like this sort of secession, like this white flight.
Yeah, once the white people moved out, and then the home values fell, and then people could afford homes that normally couldn't afford homes, you know, and a lot of people fell behind in their payments, you know, and got evicted. And when the economy starts to tank and people don't have money, that's when things get really bad. You know, so there's no easy answers for any of that stuff.
Interesting that you told me that Detroit has never truly integrated, or at least people haven't truly like sort of cohabited in, you know, in that sort of ideal way. Would you say Detroit like sort of faces this issue more so than than other cities in America?
I think it's...
Like, say, New York?
Well, no, New York's a melting pot, you know. I mean, yeah, Detroit's much more sort of like Boston, you know, where you have your South Side, you have your black areas, you have your white areas. You know, Detroit has made a lot of progress, I would say, in the last 10 years, especially in, you know, like your Wayne State area, where you have much more integration.
Right.
But from what I see, you know, I mean, your white neighborhoods are your white neighborhoods and your black neighborhoods are the black neighborhoods. You know, there's not any true integration in Detroit.
Did you ever feel disappointed by this as a, you came from a Democratic family?
I wouldn't say I was disappointed. You know, I never really worked towards a goal of integration. You know, it's just a coincidence. Probably my best friend, who was black, and I, you know, both went to Detroit high schools, both grew up in different areas of Detroit. But, you know, we've been friends for 40 years, but that's sort of an irrelevant side note to the fact that, you know, Detroit's not integrated, but...
But you guys lived in separate neighborhoods.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We didn't really meet until our early 20s. We weren't friends in high school, or we didn't, you know each other in high, you know, until after college, in reality. We met in the late 70s.
Did you come from that all-black neighborhood, too? Like, was it also very segregated?
Yeah. Yeah, but he was part of the small percentage that went to a mostly white school.
Like Cody?
Like Cody, but he didn't go to Cody. He went to Redford, which was mostly white. He just learned to live in a white world. You know? He's very... adaptive to, I mean, he's very successful, you know. He's bright, has a great personality, and I don't know if it's because he's lighter skinned that it makes him more, you know, white people more comfortable around him, but he's done extremely well for himself. You know, he's a principal now at a school in Texas.
I see.
And he works with underprivileged, troubled youth, actually, in Texas. But he lives in a white world in Texas as well, basically. But, I mean, he's very pro-black. He's, you know, he's kind of like, I compare him to President Obama. He reminds me of President Obama with that kind of class and style. And a guy like that's going to succeed anywhere, you know, whether he's in a white neighborhood or a black neighborhood.
Right.
But
so you told me that there was more integration, there was more of a racial clash, and this got worse and worse after you graduated. So this, like, did you continue to see this in college?
No, college was mostly white. U of M Dearborn was where I went. So because it's in Dearborn, I think it had mostly a white, you know, classroom. I mean, I had mostly white people in most of my classes. You know, I knew a couple of black people, but I didn't have any black friends back then.
But your brother saw a lot of these clashes.
Yeah, there was more each year after I had gotten out of high school, you know. And again, it's the numbers. As the percentage, I'm not blaming the blacks, I'm just saying as the percentage of blacks grew, you know. There was more tension.
Because of those differences.
Yeah. It's like if you're walking down the hall and you don't see any black kids, and you see a couple of them, you can, you know, you're cool with that. But then when you see groups of them, and maybe one group bumps another group, and maybe the group gets bigger, you know, or you see the crowd at the basketball game or the football game, you know, maybe somebody says something, or, you know, somebody's looking at somebody's girlfriend, you know, I mean, racial troubles are everywhere in society, you know. And like I said, when the numbers got more balanced, it became more difficult. You know, the white people didn't have control of the situation, so to speak.
I see. Did your brother graduate from Cody, or did he leave before?
No, I had two other brothers that graduated from Cody after me. And the youngest brother didn't go to Cody. But they never had any personal troubles. You know, there was no clashes that I know of.
Where did your youngest brother go?
St. Alphonsus.
Where's that?
It's in Detroit.
It's like, is that like still your...
Catholic high school.
Like still like West Side Detroit?
Yeah. It's pretty much just north of Wayne State area. You know, it's north. It's up on the northern...
Very
like around Davison.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That area.
I drive around there.
Yeah, sure. I don't know if it's still there even, but...
I don't think so. But we were talking about the... We briefly talked about the resurgence of Detroit. So, like, would you say that there is a resurgence for Detroit? That is slowly healing?
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. If you drive down Woodward now, the shops, the activity, the hustle and bustle, you know? I mean, as I've gotten older, I go downtown less, you know? But when I go down there for Noel nights... or other activities, you know, where you see a cultural mixing of people, you know, it's pretty tremendous. And I think it's finally making some real progress, you know, or somebody like yourself that chooses to go to school at Wayne State, you know, you're helping the situation.
See. You know? Oh, thank you again.
Okay.
That was a really good interview.
Yeah, it's good to look back on stuff.